Hey there. Welcome to another Tesla Motors Club podcast. My name is Lewis.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Mike.
In today's episode, we're going to cover the refreshed Model 3. We'll go over Dan O'Dowd's Super Bowl spots. And Stellantis finally adopted NACS. All that and more. Episode 59 starts now. We're back. We're here. How are you guys?
Everything's pretty good.
Everything's right. Just great.
Yeah. It's a good few weeks.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I watch bits and pieces.
Normally, no. I watched a few minutes of it. I saw the end of the fourth quarter and then the overtime for some reason. I don't know why.
My wife watched the Super Bowl. I got on the Peloton for 40 minutes.
So. Fair enough. Well, we'll cover some of the drama that happened with the Super Bowl, specifically to Tesla.
There was drama.
We won't cover the Super Bowl drama. That's a different podcast. We'll cover the Tesla-related drama. But first, let's jump in to the refreshed Model 3, as we used to always call it, Project Highland, which is the code name. Finally released in North America earlier this year. And I believe Doug got some hands-on experience.
He's the man.
Hands-on.
Touchy-feely.
He touched it and everything. He touched it. He drove it.
Nothing that special. I mean, any of you guys can do this, obviously. Just go online and you find your closest Tesla location and you schedule a drive. And I literally did that for a drive that was 20 minutes later than the time that it currently was. And I drove there and test drove it. So not like a full comprehensive review sort of thing. But it is neat to notice the difference. It has a different look to it a bit.
A little sharper, right?
Yeah, it looks a little meaner.
Okay.
The eyes are a little more narrow because it has the matrix headlights.
Got
now,
that
I think.
Squinty look, yeah.
A little bit. It's like, what are you guys up to? Yeah,
the Clint Eastwood look, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at Tesla's YouTube, they've gone over some of the differences, and Von Holzhausen says they trimmed the baby fat. It's a welcome adjustment. When I first got my Model 3, there are a bunch of little niggles. I'd like, oh, they didn't quite completely think this through. The first time it rained, I opened the trunk.
It's all the water. Yeah.
And it went directly into the trunk. I'm like, okay,
yep.
That was a design flaw. You guys should have foreseen that. And they made adjustments to fix that within a few months of me getting my cards by making a gasket bigger or something. It looks like the new car doesn't have that issue. Another just little thing I noticed when I had my car is that, okay, if you want to plug something in to the cigarette lighter charger in the armrest,
yeah.
Most cars for, I know, probably 20 years prior would have a little pass-through, a little notch for you to be able to close that lid and not be pinching whatever cable for whatever you're charging. And that wasn't there. I'm like, wow, that's,
yep.
They didn't pay attention to that.
God gave us Dremel tools.
And the new one, there's a nice sort of space there. And also it opens and closes nicer because it's magnetic instead of having a latch.
Isn't the glove box magnetic now too?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that, though. So in the glove box, yeah, you put in the code and a magnet releases and it falls open and you close it. It closes nice and easy with a magnet. But if it's a magnet.
Electromagnets always run.
Anybody can jimmy that open.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
You would think. Or if your 12-volt fails. Yeah.
It's not clear to me how they're doing it. Sometimes it might be permanent magnets that are holding it closed. Mm. And then there's a solenoid that pushes it out. Or sometimes people that do optics have these magnetic mounts where they have sort of two magnets that are facing one direction. When you turn the knob, one changes so it cancels out and then you can remove your thing. So I don't know what actual mechanism, but if it's just a magnet holding it closed, you could jimmy a piece of something in there and get it open.
Sure. Put a shim in.
It somehow feels slightly less secure.
Secure.
But none of those things are very secure anyways.
I've read on Reddit and on TMC that there seems to be a lot of debate about the materials used on the inside, that the door panels seem to feel cheaper and some of the plastics seem a little cheaper. Is that just perception or?
I don't know. Compared to my own car, I wouldn't call it cheaper. It seems less plasticky. And there are spots where they've used carpet where it used to be just plastic. In the door pockets, for example, in my car, it's just a plastic.
Yeah, things rattle around. Yeah.
And yeah, so that's what they've been thinking about, things that make the interior more quiet. It has that acoustic glass that came out with the Model Y.
Yeah.
Much more refined, much more quiet. It feels nicer in the inside. I guess the main difference is that accent lighting that we've been able to get as an aftermarket thing for a long time. And that feels a little gimmicky, but it definitely adds to the experience of being in the car and having a sense of where the dash is, especially when you're driving at night. But I would say the biggest positive for me was the ventilated seats.
I was going to ask, is that real?
It is real, and it's great. There are times when I've had to go some places, and for the most part, it's a nice experience. Like, okay, it's hot outside. I need to get somewhere. I'm just getting out of the shower. So myself, I'm outgassing moisture, and you're trying to get someplace, and you don't want to be all sweaty. With the app, I'll get the temperature nice and cool so I can get in the car.
Yeah.
But while you're driving, right, I have to lean forward to
dry your back.
Some airspace, right? This just feels great. So that's a kind of feature. If I had it in my car, I'd have a hard time giving up, depending where you live. I'm sure for Lewis.
I have them in my car. It's wonderful. Living in Texas, you need air conditioned seats.
The S has had it for quite a while, though. I mean, that's been like a feature for years.
But yeah, that is probably, to me, the most major upgrade.
No, I think the elephant in the room is the deletion.
Yeah.
The deletion of the stocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I was talking about what are benefits? What are positive changes? That's what I'm starting with.
Some people view the stockless as a benefit. It seems to be pretty polarized.
Those people are crazy. The only benefit I see is maybe it's cheaper for Tesla, but it is such a natural user interface. I don't see any actual advantage for losing them. They're not in the way. I'm not whacking them by accident.
Don't you push up on the roof line to shift the car now? Isn't that where the button is?
You can. You don't have to use the roof line.
Okay.
You can use the screen and you do the swipe thing, which I think is kind of a goofy motion.
That would be annoying.
I have to be fair, you almost never have to do it.
Yeah, or you can let it guess what direction you want to go in, and it might be right most of the time.
Just be my luck to go the wrong way.
Well, I mean, that's up to you.
It's obvious which way it's going to go, though.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious which way it's going to go. So all those things are probably things I could get used to, but it wasn't natural. The main thing is changing lanes.
Yes.
It almost would be more natural to have left be my left thumb and right be my right thumb.
That I could get into. Yes.
Whereas it's my left thumb and up or down. That is not a natural motion. When I'm driving, I'm thinking the wheel's going this way. I'm not thinking, oh, I'm doing it up. I think I'm going clockwise and I hit that lever. And yeah. Oh, I'm going counterclockwise and I hit the lever. It's in the direction I'm going to turn the wheel. So it's a great interface.
It is simple.
It's simple and natural.
No thinking.
When I've driven overseas, especially in England or in Japan, that can be a problem because they put it on the other side.
Yeah.
And I want the turn signal and then the wipers go.
Windshield wipers go bananas. It's embarrassing.
But even that, eventually it's natural because it's in the direction you're turning the wheel. So yeah. The up down thing, and it's my thumb, is just not natural at all. I don't really get it. There was an occasion where I had a roundabout when I was doing the test and I want to indicate I'm going to leave, but the wheel is already at 90 degrees. It's just a mess. It seems to me there'll be less of a problem with the Cybertruck given the way that they do a variable steering ratio so that you rarely have these wide turn sort of things. So maybe it's easier there. And maybe if they combine that with the sort of steering by wire stuff, it won't be as much an issue. But I see no actual user experience gain by losing those stocks.
I believe it's purely cost savings on their part.
Yeah.
But the argument they make is aesthetics.
Is this a yoke or does it have a round wheel?
It's a round wheel.
Okay.
That's now the default. Even the vehicles that came with yokes, that's now, I think, a $500 option to get the yoke.
Yep.
Okay.
For the Model 3, it doesn't make as much of a difference because they don't have a binnacle display. But as a tall person, I've always had an issue where I can't quite see that display because of the steering wheel. So I'm the kind of person that would like a yoke.
I love my yoke.
Also, I grew up with Knight Rider. So to me, that's like the childhood fantasy of driving.
So one of our listeners, Ben Edwards, had a comment. Shame they don't have an option to buy stocks as an add-on. Ben, we got news for you. My favorite company that produces sexy buttons, and we get nothing for this, have announced that they are bringing out a retrofit for stocks. If you search on that, you can find a picture and a video where they show it in use. So stand by. You might get your stocks after all.
Yeah. Honestly, before I bought my car, because I knew there were going to be no stocks, it was the yoke and all that. And I was like, I'm not sure if I'm okay with this. I did see somebody did a project where they essentially bought a different cover for the steering column and they put in the stocks and they did the whole thing. and they got it working with a Model S Plaid. So that was one of my definitive, like, oh, okay, I'll buy it, because if it's a real deal breaker, I can just retrofit.
It's all CAN bus related. So if you can talk to the CAN bus, you know.
Exactly.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, but that seems like a project.
That's a project for sure. I love my yoke. Don't like the stock deletion for the Model S. Now, are there any other things? You talked about several benefits. Are there any other changes that you actually think are worse or you don't like with the refreshed Model 3?
Well, suspension was supposed to have changed. Could you tell a difference?
You know, in my drive, it was a fairly, wasn't a bumpy drive.
Okay.
In my own car, I get people complaining, driving over bumps and stuff. You definitely feel it. And this seemed maybe a little bit smoother, but I couldn't tell you specifically. Okay. It definitely was quieter.
Okay.
That was the biggest thing.
That's a big plus.
So you are missing the ultrasonic sensors. And even though we saw it in some renderings, there is no nose camera. For me, it's not as much of an issue because this car is pretty much identical to my existing car. And if I'm parking and I'm nosing in, I know about how far it is. And you see the headlights start to separate as you get closer, you know, the image of the headlights. So you can kind of have an idea how close you are to a wall. But I've also had my ultrasonic sensors giving me some kind of metric. Here, I don't know that I would trust just the cameras, especially when they don't have a camera right on the nose to show me how far away I am from things. You know, one of the main things I did notice that was quite different was the view from the interior camera. And I haven't heard any other reviewers talk about this. But now while I'm in the car, I went ahead and went to the settings and you can see the camera preview. The Model 3, that was the first Tesla vehicle to get an interior camera. And that was kind of hopeful, like, oh, okay, you're going to do some driver monitoring because you realize that this isn't going to be an actual robotaxi anytime soon. But it's such an afterthought, right? It's this tiny camera. A good portion of the bottom is occluded by the rearview mirror. In this car, they actually thought about it a bit more. The positioning of the mirror versus the camera is such that the mirror is completely out of the way. And I feel like that camera itself is a bit more of a fisheye, such that you can actually see more of the person in the car, right? You can see my lap. You can see my knees. You can actually, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, you can see the steering wheel if that becomes part of the driver monitoring. If you can actually see where your hands are, then maybe that's a better experience.
Sure.
But I've been getting phone calls from Tesla like, oh, you had that test drive. How'd you like it? Are you thinking about trading in your car or whatever? I will say it's not different enough. My car is great. Still great after 5 years. I got December 2018. And I still have ultrasonic sensors and FSD that kind of works. And these Hardware 4 cars are still a little bit limited. So I'm happy just to keep my existing car. But if I were spending more time in a hotter climate, it's the ventilated seats that would do it for me.
You want those seats?
Yeah.
There is a third-party ventilated seat if you're willing to spend close to $2,000 for an interior redo.
I mean, that
they redo the seats in leather, and you get to pick the leather, and ventilated seats is an option if you want to spend the money. So it's out there.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not something that I need that much, but if I was buying new, and depending where I'm living, I would probably seek out that feature.
Makes sense.
Now, I've been talking to Tesla too. And the interesting thing is they call me constantly. Hey, we saw you working with the configurator. Are you ready to buy?
Whoa, that's creepy.
I'm dead serious. I'll save my...
Are you telling me they saw you on the website and...
Yes. They said, we saw you in the site looking and you saved your configuration.
Okay, you saved it.
Blah, blah, blah.
If you saved it, maybe.
Even without saving it, they know. They're watching you.
Oh, dude, they've been watching me for a while. Maybe they don't watch me anymore, but they were purposely...
And it's not just the car watching me.
When I had a Model 3 on order, and while I was waiting, I got a BMW i3.
I'm surprised they didn't disown you.
I don't know what they're trying to do, but a couple employees emailed me like, oh, congratulations on the i3. What?
Yeah.
why are you telling me this? And why do you know that?
Vinny called you. Hey, you know, we heard you got
I think they just wanted to let me know that we're watching.
They want you to know that they know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was creepy.
Did you post about your i3 on TMC?
Nope.
Yeah.
They're just making a point.
Interesting.
They're trying to influence us at TMC back then. They're trying to make us do certain things. So.
Gotcha.
But the point I wanted to make is they're watching you.
Well,
they've seen you look at the Model 3 or the Model Y or whatever. And they call up and say, hey, are you ready to buy? I said, well, what's my trade-in? The trouble with Tesla right now is that trade-in just sucks.
Yeah.
Their trade-in is terrible.
But they've always been really bad about the value they give you when you trade in your vehicle.
Yes.
So you're almost always better off And that might be true of most dealerships going private party.
Well, I went to a local dealer and they gave me $5,000. Well, if I'd give them my car, they'd give me $5,000 more than what Tesla was offering. Mm-hmm. That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
So if you have any interest in the Highland, don't sell it to Tesla.
It is interesting to consider that they are turning those demand knobs again. They're allowing the FSD transfer.
They are.
Delivery before, I think, March 31st. If you get delivery before March 31st, they'll allow you to transfer FSD. Mm-hmm. And let's see, was there something else also about the supercharging?
I thought there was some supercharging, yeah.
If you had a car with that. Those are really old customers, though, at this point, right? But for some people, that's worth it. And you can get the Model Y super cheap now, especially since it has the full tax incentives.
Mike just put a comment, 17,300, 2019 Model 3 SRP with FSD. That's my car minus the FSD, and it was 17,000. So that FSD, Mike, is only $300 extra for you. That hurts.
Oh, well, certainly FSD has not, you got to feel bad for people that spend a lot of money on it. The value that Tesla is giving it in terms of the trade-in is pretty.
Better feel bad.
Pretty low.
Feel bad for me.
Yeah, what I have seen them doing is if you look at their pre-owned used Model 3s, virtually all of them that I've checked, the long range, now have Boost enabled. And they all come with either enhanced autopilot or FSD as part of the package. So like you said, they're really turning the knobs, trying to move inventory.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to keep coming up. If you're worried about transferring FSD and they're trying to hook you with it, I would say, don't worry. It'll come back. This is not the first time they've offered it in the last 6 months, even.
That's true.
It'll probably come back again. They've gotten to a size and scale where it's much harder to keep the growth that they need to show for their investors.
To maintain that ridiculous stock price.
That stock price. Yeah. I have a feeling the FSD transfers are going to come back. To be honest, I would be surprised if a few years from now, they're all transferable, possibly due to lawsuits or other drama that may happen. But anyway, I wouldn't worry about it. It'll come back. But yeah, it's interesting that they're starting to do that now.
Well, the Model Y is an amazing deal right now. And
and
I guess they're trying to not Osborne themselves, because everybody knows probably next year there'll be a refresh Model Y.
A refresh for the Y. Yep.
But they're trying to pretend like it doesn't exist so they can get those existing Ys out the door.
Right.
But what a great deal, though. I should say, I did test drive some other vehicles. I have a friend of mine who test drove the Audi e-tron GT. And he was so impressed with that car.
The 2024 Q8?
No, Q8 is different. Q8 is an SUV type thing.
It is. It's their new flagship.
I've test drove that too, actually. But the e-tron GT is more of a sport sedan.
Okay.
It has an aggressive face to it. And yeah, it was a nice car. So that was the goal. The goal was to test drive that so I could give my friend some feedback on it. And his wife was not very happy with it. Too fancy or something. And it's ridiculously expensive. New, it's like over $100,000.
Ouch. That hurts.
But there's one that there's like a 2022 that is used and you can get it for $55,000. That's some crazy depreciation, right? To go from $115,000 to $55,000.
$50,000? Ouch.
Yeah, like $60,000 depreciation in 2 years.
Tesla hit me for $40,000+ in 2 months. Anyway, sorry.
This is true.
I'm bitter. Keep going.
Not that you're bitter about that, are you?
That was Tesla's own doing, though, right?
Yes.
They actually changed their prices and stuff.
They dropped the price.
And this is just what the used market is doing on this vehicle.
Sure.
But it was pretty cool. So I'll start by saying in the search to try to drive this thing, somehow the availability isn't very high. And so the first Audi dealership I went to did not have it, but they did have the Q8 e-tron, which I tried. And I have to say, like we were talking about the Porsche Macan before, and one of the things you said, it just seemed like it's a car that just happens to be an EV. That was my sense of this Q8. There was nothing about driving it that told me it was an EV. It had the nice sort of Audi features, little too many, you know, I'm used to Tesla now, too many buttons for me, but it drove really smooth and it had basically no engine braking, no throttle lift regen.
See, that just surprises me, especially from Audi.
The thing is, though, if you're driving family around or people around, that gives you a very smooth drive, right?
I guess.
You're on the highway. There's no jerking back and forth.
It's herky jerky. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just very smooth. And one thing I noticed in these vehicles, at least Audi and Porsche, actually, I'll talk about a Porsche a little later, that they have charging ports on both sides of the vehicle.
Oh, nice.
They'll do level two on both sides of the car, but then only one side will have the DC fast charging. But that makes it very convenient.
Sure.
For charging at home.
Or at the market or the mall or anywhere else.
Yeah. And the industry has pretty much given up on high power AC charging. When the Roadster came out, there was no DC fast charging available. But what they did do is you could AC charge it at 80 amps.
80 amps. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, 80 amps. And that was important because especially if you're going somewhere, that can be the difference of hours. Whereas since fast charging is available, you're not really using AC charging on the road, like while you're driving anymore. If you're using AC charging, it's because you're just parked or whatever. And it seems like the industry has hauled at most 50 amps or like 48 amps, typically of what people are doing. I set up and 32 amps was plenty for me. So the fact that they've given up on that, think about the cabling you need for 80 amps compared to 40 amps. That's quite a big difference. So they'll spend the money because that was something you used to never see. They have charge ports on both sides. Oh, okay. No one's going to spend the money on that. But for relatively low power AC charging, they'll go ahead and do that because it is a big convenience factor.
Sure.
What is interesting though is where they've chosen which side. So on that Q8, the fast charge was on the front left, but I also drove the e-tron GT and the Porsche Taycan, and both those put it on the front right, which seemed to me to be the right spot. If you're going to eventually use the Tesla superchargers, you're going to have an easier time if it's on the front right, since for us, it's on the rear back, right? So you nose in instead of backing in. So I drove this e-tron GT. It's pretty sporty. But again, with that vehicle, the throttle lift, there wasn't much regen. It was basically driving like an automatic, and that's not what I really want. I want a car to drive
so
like
it would actually coast.
Yeah.
Free wheel coast.
Now, again, this was a relatively short test drive, and I'm like, is there a mode to change this? And they seemed to think there was. The guy with me wasn't necessarily finding it. They did have a paddle shifter type thing where you could select between different modes of regen. The Chevy Volt had something like that, but you would hold it, and it would give you some relatively heavy regen braking as you held it. With this thing, it was just a toggle between three different modes, and none of those modes felt particularly heavy in terms of the regen. The regen on my Model 3 is more when I lift the throttle. So I wasn't really feeling it. Also, it had some power. It had some pickup when you stepped on it, but it felt delayed. Like you'd step on it. Instead of getting it instantly, it would eventually happen. It was almost like driving a car with turbo lag. That's what it felt like.
Oh, wow.
In a way, you might be right because the Q8's got three motors, but only two actually drive the car. The third is when you step on the gas and you push it into passing. So there probably is a delay.
Yeah, so I didn't really try that kind of thing in the Q8, but in the GT, that's the feeling I had. But it had a nice sporty interior. But for the cost and the bottom line, that the conversation I'll have with my friend is, I can't recommend it over the Model 3. Now, there's no performance Model 3 yet, if that's important to you.
That's true.
If you like it enough that you think you want to go used, I'm sure there are plenty of good used Tesla deals there. I guess the other thing about it is that they're supposed to be going to NACS soon. His scope is like 10 years. Like, here's something I'm going to own for 10 years. Even if you're fine charging at home, do you really want to be on the...
on the obsolete connector?
Yeah, it's like knowing that beta is going to die in a year and you buy beta instead of getting VHS.
I mean, he could just buy a nice used Model S Plaid and that'll give him everything.
You wouldn't happen to have one for sale, would you, Lewis?
Nope.
So anyway, that if you're going to think 55K, but I think part of it was the styling and he found it really neat. And he's currently not an EV driver.
And you said it was very Audi-like on the inside. So it's got the really nice leather buckets and all the chrome doodads. And yeah,
definitely more seat bolstering than we have. But I'll tell you, though, I drove it after I drove a Porsche Taycan. So when I went to the dealership that didn't have the e-tron GT, but had the Q8 next door, owned by the same people, was a Porsche dealership that had the Taycan. Okay. I was pretty impressed with the Taycan just because the styling was cool. It was very much a cockpit. They had a binnacle that kind of curved around. Again, it was a computer display, but it curved around. So it must have been like an organic LED kind of thing, an OLED type screen. That was nice. And then the entire dash, there was a screen to your side, kind of like where the Model 3 or Model S center screen would be. But then there's also a screen extending all the way in front of the passenger. And the passer can do things like mess with navigation and whatnot. But Also, it could display things like a nice G gauge. If you're taking a curve and you can see the little dot going. And why hasn't Tesla done that for us yet? That should have just been a software update years ago to have a nice sport display.
That would encourage bad behavior.
I mean, you're going to have a plaid mode and a launch mode. You should have those kind of cool driving features.
How many G's was
that's
I taking?
Right, that's right.
How many lateral G's? How many rear G's, front G's? When I first was doing a test ride in the Plaid, I used to do a thing where I'd have a book. I let the guy launch and I watched my book be stuck to the back. And I realized, okay, we're pulling more than a G, it just forward, right? So why not have that in the history and get to see all that? I'm sure Tesla has the sensors. So let's see it.
I'm sure they track it. So it's just a question of an interface.
Yeah.
Another thing that Taycan had was a very nice heads-up display for your speed and such.
Ooh, very nice.
That was rumored. Like when we first found out back in 2015 or something, when we were waiting for the Model 3, that it wasn't going to have a display in the front. It was only going to have the center screen. Everybody expected, oh, well, they'll do a heads-up display. And they never did.
Yeah, I'd still love a heads-up. I have to say, that would be nice.
It's so cool. I'm just looking at the road and I can see the speed and it feels like it's projected out on the road.
You want your G meter with your speed on the heads up. That way you don't have to glance off to the side.
Why not?
It definitely gives it a feeling of futuristic technology. Mm-hmm. And it's lame that we don't have it. Even with my car, every car in its class that's that price point, that type of performance, they have those cool types of things.
Sure.
And it's sad that Tesla didn't bother doing that.
You want the future to feel like the future, right?
Right.
What's up? Where's the heads up display? Yeah. It's not difficult.
It's not that expensive. Yeah.
It's all about Elon, right? Maybe he had some aversion to it or something.
He didn't play enough fighter pilot games as a kid. So,
yeah. So that was something I wish was in my Model 3. Driving that Porsche Taycan, I was like, this is a pretty cool car. Definitely more cool than my Model 3. It looks great too.
Yeah.
But of course, for price.
The Porsche is what? Four times as much as your Model 3?
There are various different trim levels, obviously.
Of course.
And of course, the highest thing, they call it a turbo, which makes no sense on a
EV.
On an electric vehicle. You know, calling that a turbo.
Yeah.
There's like a zillion options and things. But the vehicle was already $120,000, I think.
Ouch.
So it's ridiculously expensive. But it looks like what it costs.
It is a Porsche.
And yeah, I found the interior amazing. The size of the steering wheel, the feel of it. It had a little knob on it for the driving mode.
Ooh, I could get used to that.
It's a very cool car.
I pulled up the numbers because I was curious. The base model Taycan 2024 is $90,000 and change.
And change.
The fully loaded one is $197,000 and change.
Yeah, nearly $200,000.
Oh, ouch.
No, it's much more expensive.
What's the range? Do you happen to see what the range is there somewhere?
It depends on the trim and stuff. The worst range has 206 miles and the maximum goes up to 246. Yeah.
For a pure sports car, that's probably not too bad.
Yeah. It's not as good as mine though. So whatever.
Yeah. The other thing about it is that car, I don't know that I could stand it on a long drive. I did play with the navigation. I was in Maryland when I drove it and I said, okay, say I wanted to drive to Cape Canaveral, Florida, and it will navigate to it and it will put in these charging spots. They're all Electrify America. What's the probability that this will really work? Now, hopefully we can look forward to them getting a software update where they can include other charging networks. It felt like that was a third party thing that you could add on. So maybe it would be smart to say, okay, we can add the Teslas or whatever other charging networks that are out there. But also that display, it was more integrated in a dash type display. So instead of having a big thing that looks like an iPad, it was maybe 6 inches tall. It didn't seem quite big enough for me to really, at least for what I'm used to have a nice navigation.
Did you notice if it offered the real-time traffic like the Tesla does?
It had enough of a connection to navigate to Florida. It's got whatever it needs to get real-time traffic. But it just didn't seem that great of a navigating experience. It was a nice setup, though. It wasn't the crappy BMW iDrive sort of thing. What they did was they had the big binnacle. They had a display that stretched all the way to the passenger side. And then there was a touch screen that's right about, like, if you put your elbow on the center armrest, right where your hand would be, there was an angled display touch screen that had a nice haptic feedback. You could adjust your HVAC, your navigation, and all that stuff from there. Mm-hmm. And it was nice. Instead of having to reach out like you have to do for the Tesla Center screen.
Sure.
I appreciated that. So it felt like it thought about the user interface in terms of someone who's sitting here trying to drive a sporty vehicle.
So you would say they were focused a little bit on driver safety.
Maybe.
That was a terrible segue.
Yeah.
So our next topic that we wanted to touch on is Dan O'Dowd, who has been on the show.
Drama.
In the past, we interviewed him.
Yeah. He asked to come back even.
Did he? Oh, nice. He started something called the Dawn Project we talked about on that episode. They take out Super Bowl ads, apparently, because they did one last time and they did it again this year, basically anti-Tesla Super Bowl ads, and drama ensues.
This is true.
Mike, I don't know if you want to talk about it a little bit. Did you see the ads? What did you think of the ads?
Well, it's the same story. You know, Tesla FSD can't be trusted. It's going to try to kill you. It will kill you. That hasn't changed. What was different this time is he, and I use the royal he.
The royal he.
Someone from his organization.
The Dawn Project. Yeah.
Used the NTSB logo in the advertisement. The NTSB right away generated a denial. We did not bless or approve this ad. They don't have permission to use the logo, blah, 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 which is kind of a big deal to be stealing the logo of a federal bureau of anything.
Yeah, but what was the context, though?
I don't think the government cares about context. The implication was that the NTSB blessed this ad.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the content was valid. And that's really the crux of the matter, because the content is up for debate about how valid it is. Heads falling off and whatnot withstanding.
Yeah. I saw the ads. There are two different ads this time.
Yes, there were.
And like last year, I happened to be in the DC area watching the Super Bowl, and I saw it again. A lot of it, the actual driving stuff seemed to be the same footage. They still had the children mannequins with...
Yep.
Spring-loaded heads or something to the heads, but flying off when they got hit. So there's nothing particularly new. Lewis, you looked into where these ads were showing, because they weren't nationwide, right? They're in specific locations.
Correct.
Any difference this year versus last year?
Yeah, they toned it down. So last year it aired in Washington, D.C., and then the capitals of various populated states trying to influence lawmakers, right? So it was in Atlanta, in Austin, Tallahassee, Albany,
targeted
Sacramento. So it was in a lot of places. This year, most of those markets didn't get it. It was Washington, D.C., Dover, Delaware, Traverse City, Michigan, and Santa Barbara, California. And supposedly, they also planned on it running in Sacramento again. However, CBS Sacramento refused to air the ads. Now, this is not me saying this. This is a quote from the Dawn Project's spokesperson. They said, CBS Sacramento refused to air the ad, saying social cause and issue advocacy ads are not permitted. And that's why they wouldn't air them there. So it's definitely a downgrade in the number of markets they tried airing in this time.
That's an interesting statement, given some of the other ads that did play, which were definitely social advocacy.
Yeah. Is there any conspiracy theory with Sacramento? It's on the way between Palo Alto and Reno. So we got a lot of Teslas coming through to get between the Gigafactory and the headquarters, whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure there's tons of conspiracy theories. I find it interesting they didn't bother in Austin, for example. If they're trying to goad Elon, obviously this is where the headquarters of Tesla is now. I would have expected them to still air them here. Maybe they gave up because they know that Tesla and Texas are happy together and they're not going to sway anybody. California is still one of Tesla's biggest markets, if not the biggest market as far as in the U.S.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to influence people to not buy the cars. It's not just the politicians. It was interesting that they did spend less money, but they planned on spending more money. So it's like, wait, was the Super Bowl ad spots cheaper this year? Because they played in fewer markets, but it was almost the same price. It was like last year they spent $598,000, and this year they spent $552,000. Yet they were in five or whatever fewer cities.
And it was two spots this time.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
Definitely the DC targeting feels like this is for politicians.
Sure.
And the messaging is very much, this should be banned.
Right.
And that's the way they put it. Why is the government allowing this?
Won't somebody think of the children?
I mean, of course, as drivers, we like it or like being able to use it.
Sure.
I think it's completely reasonable, though, that it shouldn't be called
FSD.
FSD, which is
yes,
it's not even called self-driving. It's full self-driving because
right.
Because it actually works this time, which it doesn't. So, or isn't actually full self-driving. Yeah, that's a problem, I think. And there's a difference between what people think it is versus what the people actually use it know it is. So
right.
That's a gap that shouldn't really be there.
Sure.
So come on, fix it. Fix it, Tesla.
I definitely disagree with Dan O'Dowd on the Dawn Project. I get why they're doing it. I agree that the marketing of FSD is misleading. But I don't think it should be banned. I don't think they should prevent it. I think that Tesla should be motivated to improve it and make sure motivated. That they're working hard at making it better. At the end of the day, I think it really does come down to money, right? The perception that it's better than it is enables Tesla to generate more revenue through stock valuation, through more people purchasing it and spending money on it. I feel like once you spend money on it, you pretty quickly will understand what it can do and what it is and you know what it's able to do. For example, I'll use it myself when I'm driving. My wife doesn't really like me to use it if she's in the car, depending on the situation. Mm-hmm. I don't blame her. And I don't use it all the time when I drive. To be honest, I bought my car because I actually enjoy driving. So I don't really want to use it all the time, but I do use it occasionally and I do enjoy it when I use it. And I feel like most people that have it are probably responsible.
No plaid robo-taxi for you. Got it.
Yeah, no plaid robo-taxi. I disagree with the Dawn Project's focus on this. I think there are other bigger issues they could be focusing on if their stated mission was truly what they want to accomplish. It feels personal, right? And it's very political. It feels very personal that this is the avenue that they go with for attacking it. But it is what it is. I don't think anything will come of it. So,
Yeah, it's interesting. With regards to the stock price, the fact that we call it Tesla, not Tesla Motors anymore, they want to position themselves as not simply an automotive company, but a technology company.
Optimus.
Yeah. So I think they can make pretty good arguments for that, that it is more a technology company or at least in part a technology company and not just a car company. Because otherwise, it's ridiculous, right? Their market cap is what, the next 10 combined, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge.
That includes Ford, manufacturers that sell millions of cars a year, probably tens of million. I don't know off the top of my head. If you just look at that, this is ridiculous. How does that valuation make any sense? Even given that right now, it's what, between half and a quarter of what the peak was. It's ridiculous. So it kind of needs to be a technology company.
I just looked it up. So Toyota is the largest automaker selling. They sell over 10 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's their market cap compared to Tesla?
You know? Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It makes you think a little bit about, hopefully people don't go and get too pissed, but like Adam Neumann with WeWork, that was clearly a real estate company.
Yes.
Selling office space, but he got to spin it as, oh, this is a technology company. And it got crazy amount of investment and it never quite made it to be public. But if it had, those guys could have cashed out pretty well.
Oh, he did all right.
Oh, he personally did all right.
He did all right.
But to be fair, Tesla is more than just a car company, right? They do sell other products. They do have a lot of potential to make money in other areas. So I don't think it's completely nonsense. I think it is more inflated than it probably should be, but there is a lot of potential there to continue to grow and do other cool, interesting things. I appreciate a lot of the projects they worked on. Optimus is a really cool project. We'll see if anything comes of it. Trying to push the envelope with Dojo and other types of AI technologies. It'll be interesting to see that could impact other things. So anyway, not to go down the rabbit hole of stock and valuations, but it was interesting to see that the Dawn Project ran more ads. They were pretty much the same as the old ads, narrowed their marketing a little bit. I still amused that Sacramento told them to screw off. You're not playing your ads.
So they did approach us to come back. Like you said, we had a long interview with the guy.
We did.
2 hours long, and we let him say his piece. And I seemed mostly sane. But I think Tesla had to do some recall, which really was just an over-air software update. And I guess he felt, or somebody there felt really justified with this recall. And as far as I'm concerned, made no real difference. I didn't really feel the need to go back and rehash everything. And I don't really feel like a whole lot has changed, except that the supposed competitors in this market, mainly Cruise and Waymo, have had their setbacks too since then. That's true. Cruise is basically not happening right now. Waymo had to do a big software recall or update recently also. You think, oh, well, at least Waymo's still happening, but they've slowed down a bit too. So let's see. RC Robinson asks, what car brand has Dawn Project software? I think the Dawn Project is a separate thing.
It is.
But Dan O'Dowd, what was the name of his company?
Green Hill Software.
You know, we tried to ask him. He couldn't quite tell us specifically what cars use their software.
His answer was that most major brands have something that'll have their software in it because they sell to so many different companies that make components that then sell to other companies. So in the supply chain, their software's in a lot of car companies.
That in some ways reflects the issue with the rest of the auto industry in that it's this big mess of all these other suppliers doing all their little niche things.
Yep.
Yep.
Whereas Tesla has nice vertical control of it all.
For sure. So I think there's just one other topic. Shell announced they're closing their hydrogen station. I don't know if it was just in California, or I guess that's maybe the only place they had them. That's
where they were to begin with.
Yeah. So yeah, that's, I guess, them throwing in the towel.
You think?
I don't even know. Do people still buy the Mirai and like other hydrogen cars? How many of them are even still sold?
So I looked it up. In 2023, there was 2,968 new hydrogen cars sold. Period.
That was new, but then the total that were out there.
Right. So the Hydrogen Fuel Cell Partnership,
which is a California organization related to CARB.
That's right. Says from January 17th, 2024, the total number of hydrogen fueled cell cars sold and leased in the U.S., 17,900. Hydrogen stations available in California, 55.
It just never made sense. Dude, this hydrogen stuff has been such a mess for so long.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be real as a physics nerd. I thought, okay, that's really great. Then I actually did the math and it makes no sense compared to a battery electric vehicle. Everything they ever said about what this technology was going to be definitely didn't come true. And a lot of it was lies. Shell, why was Shell interested in it? Mainly it was to try to slow down EVs, right? Shell wants to sell you a petroleum product. And guess what? That hydrogen was the petroleum product, right?
Oh, you did believe all the greenwashing?
They got it from reformation of methane that they get from their oil drilling, right? And if the hydrogen came from a green source, you're using four times as much energy as if you just charge the battery. So it just never made any real sense. And then where's the convenience? The fact I can charge my car at home is huge.
Sure.
The fact that there's already electricity infrastructure across this whole nation that we can just charge our cars. I haven't found anybody that actually was a proponent for hydrogen technology that didn't have some kind of financial reason to be so.
Right. So kind of hook.
Yeah.
There's this guy named Greg Blenko, who was very much a big hydrogen advocate. I think his dad had some patents on hydrogen pipelines. And in his mind, oh, we're going to have this whole new hydrogen economy. And we're going to send that hydrogen through pipelines all over the country.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it sounds good at the surface to a layperson, myself included. When I first heard of it, I was like, oh, that's cool technology concept.
The exhaust is just water. You could drink it.
Exactly. But when you dig into it, you realize all the technical and physics challenges that make it untenable and from safety and everything else.
You might want to explain to our listeners who don't know some of the fun points about hydrogen, how small the molecules are, why that's such a problem.
Yeah, it leaks from everything. It permeates materials.
And it changes materials.
It changes them, right? Even tanks and pipes and all that. It'll embed itself into the molecular structure of the surface that comes in contact.
Yeah, with the hydrogen embrittlement.
It's very difficult to work with well. Physicists have a lot of experience with it in certain fields, and it's not something that you'd recommend to like everybody just has in their house and everybody just.
Oh, you're not going to have a compressor in your garage to make high pressure liquid hydrogen to fill your car.
When I worked in a lab, there are plenty of things that could kill me. I could get electrocuted.
Sharp, pointy objects.
I was working with a superconducting magnet and I could release a bunch of helium gas, which was fine to breathe, except you could get asphyxiated because it would push all the oxygen out.
Right. There's no oxygen.
But the main thing that scared me was the compressed gas tanks. I had to walk from one lab to another lab across a parking lot, a couple roads with these cylinders of gas on a little cart. And if those things fell off, I was so scared, right? Because if you knock the valve off, you have an uncontrolled torpedo. And people have died. There was a story of someone in a lab, wasn't even in the lab. The dude was on the floor above, and a tank fell over, and it launched, and it went through the floor and killed the guy in the floor above, okay? That's not what you want.
Mythbusters has an episode on this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did an episode on that.
So anyway, it's dangerous. It doesn't make sense. It sounds good on the surface until you dig into it, and then you realize this probably isn't a good idea. So anyway, so that was... Let's see. We got a few more comments. RC Robinson-san says, Mirai has no performance with only 180 horsepower. No frunk room is taken up by the fuel cell. No trunk room taken up by the tank. No passenger headroom. Yeah, there's all these other engineering challenges of like, how do you build a car that is worthwhile?
That was the other issue. The fuel cell, the most power you're going to get out of that was pretty low.
Yeah.
So all it's really doing, guess what? It's charging a battery buffer. So you had a battery in that thing anyway.
Yep.
I remember there was a rebranding that happened in the 2010s. They used to be called hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, HFCVs. That's what they called them. And at some point after Tesla, EVs started being cool and awesome. So they rebranded them to FCEVs. So they're fuel cell electric vehicles. And of course, they are electric vehicles. They're using electricity. But they hide the hydrogen part and just call them, it's a different type of electric vehicle. It's like, there are many solutions to many problems. Why can't we have this one too? Why are you EV people so negative about the hydrogen vehicles? Like, get out of here. Get out of here. This technology is only existing right now to try to slow down EVs. Yeah. That was the only reason. Like, why would you get an EV when you have the hydrogen fuel cell vehicle that's even more advanced? Wait for that one.
I think there are people that were good faith actors. Certainly, there were bad faith actors, but there were good faith actors that I think range anxiety was a big concern and still is a concern for a lot of people. Like, why have a lot of people not switched to EVs? And there was some idea that, oh, I could go to this thing, it'll charge, it'll refill the tank much faster, blah, blah, blah.
It doesn't.
I think range anxiety just over time should go away. I think as battery technology improves, charging technology improves, like eventually this issue stops being an issue.
Guess who has the real range anxiety? The guy driving that Toyota Mirai who can only have one charging location in his area.
Right.
That was ridiculous, right?
Yeah, one.
So he can only go so far because he got to get back to that one place. He can't charge it at home.
Right.
He can't charge it on the road. He can't like unplug a vending machine and plug his car in if he had to, you know. He's screwed.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because when it comes to an EV, I've only supercharged once and I did it just to prove that it worked. I didn't need to. I've always just charged at my house. Most people, most of the time, will only ever need to charge at their house or at their apartments as those infrastructures are building out or at work or whatever. And then you've also got it at the supermarket and you've got like anywhere that you go, it's just, it's everywhere. So you really don't have to worry about range unless you're talking about road trips and the infrastructure is there with Tesla. So this is not an issue anymore. Yet a lot of people are still worried about it.
For a time, there are people saying, well, why don't we have hydrogen plug-in hybrid vehicles? So you can plug it in, but then also you can go get hydrogen for the faster fueling. I'm like, how the heck does that make any sense? The only reason plug-in hybrid vehicles make sense is because guess what? The hybrid part, you rely on a fueling system that's existing and is ubiquitous, meaning the gas stations that exist, right? How would it make sense for your emergency fuel to be hydrogen when there's more places where you could just plug the thing in versus getting that hydrogen? So it's the dumbest idea ever.
I don't know what you're complaining about, Doug. There's 55 hydrogen stations in California. Or at least there was before Shell bailed out.
No, there used to be 55. Oh, man. Oh, you know what? We totally forgot to mention Stellantis.
Ah, yes.
With NACS.
Oh, yeah.
They were the last ones.
The final domino to fall.
Okay. So now Tesla has won. They've defeated the industry when it comes to charging standards in North America. We've talked about it probably to death on the show in the past. We all agree that NACS is far superior to CCS and the other standards out there. And now every major automaker
is on board
globally that's selling cars in North America. They're going to be offering NACS at some point in the hopefully not too distant future. I think a few of them are starting. I think it's next year primarily where we're going to start seeing them, maybe some later this year.
I think next year for almost all of them.
I know for sure 2025, but I wasn't sure if anyone's doing it sooner.
It's Ford that's made the biggest commitment about it, saying that they should offer some adapters this year and that their vehicles will start featuring that connector next year. And it should be 2025 model year vehicles.
Right.
I told you I test drove these Volkswagen Group vehicles, and talking to those guys, they have no idea. They're not sure. So we'll see.
Might just be political blustering or
maybe, but at some point they'll just have to do it. It won't matter if they're complaining about it or not. They need to get around to it soon. And I do wonder a little bit about the cars that have ports on both sides. I think that's a great feature, but the way the Tesla connector is all integrated in that one thing. Whereas when I looked at that e-tron GT, the side that had the fast charging, you could just tell because you have to flip down the little bit to get the two big pins for the CCS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point of CCS, right? It's combined standard. It just added extra pins on for the DC. With the Tesla connector, it's not going to be as obvious. So I wonder how they're going to do that. They'll just have to label it. Or maybe, you know, as Mike has alluded to several times, if the Tesla internal wiring is that much cheaper, maybe they would allow it on both sides. But I don't know.
Guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Tesla doesn't offer it. I wish they would.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you want to plug in from the other side.
It's not very Tesla, though, to be honest. Like, Tesla is all about improvements to the car that reduce costs. And this would be an improvement to the car that would increase costs.
Well, Tesla is also, this is the decision we made and it's the right one.
Right. No doubling back. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always complained about the charge port being on the left side of the car because it just makes curbside charging ridiculous in cities so ridiculous.
I have to bring my cord around because I might park my car in the right bay of the garage, so I put my charger on the right wall of the garage, so I have to wrap it around my car, or I gotta back in, which I'm not doing.
Our HOA actually complained about charging in the street with a Tesla because it wasn't so much the cord was across the sidewalk, which they complained about too, but they really complained about
sticking out.
The cord sticking out into where people drove. Mm.
I've had to charge in the city, and sometimes I've parked facing the wrong direction so I could plug my car in without feeling like the thing is dangling out. But in many states, you can't park in the wrong direction.
That's true.
You got a ticket for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have it on both sides, or I've always thought the front right was the smartest spot since most people park nose in, at least in this country. So,
yeah. So as it stands now, every major car company said they're going to switch. So that's good news for Tesla. We'll see how that goes over the next year or two and how that's going to impact us at our Tesla supercharging stations. But I don't know.
We'll see.
There's all this drama around EV adoption possibly slowing and whatever, but I don't know. We'll see. So I think that we covered everything we planned to cover.
I think so.
So that's a wrap.
We covered enough.
We covered enough. You've heard us talk long enough today.
Yeah.
So again, thank you all for checking in and hanging out with us. Thanks for your questions and comments. Keep them coming. Feel free to go to teslamotorsclub.com. You can always become a supporting member. It's one way to support the website, which in turn supports the podcast. Feel free to like and subscribe. We're streaming on X. I guess we have to call it X now, or Elon will yell at me.
We're streaming X videos.
We're streaming live on X. We're streaming live on YouTube. So as always, like, subscribe, hit the bells, do all those fun things. Thanks to our producers behind the scenes, Danny and Adam and others. And we'll see you next time.